TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
It is another edition of the Raised by Wolves podcast. Manny Hill, Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham, we are all here in one place for the first time in a while since I think we did that live show on the same day that Joe Mauer announced his retirement, that Monday.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
A little bit different location today.
Yeah, we're in the what they call the James Bond room here.
I feel like I'm planning an attack on somebody. So watch out.
We're in one place. I don't know if Danny's in one piece though.
I'm tired.
You were at the game last night.
I was at the game last night in Cleveland. Hopped on the first flight out of Cleveland to Minneapolis this morning. So I've been
just for the Raised by Wolves podcast.
I couldn't miss this. Why would I ever do that? I can't be like you and just, you know, go out of town and hop on via Skype and like I'm not that cool. So I figured I had to get back here as soon as I possibly could. So here I am. Just, you know, was in Cleveland like 5 hours ago. Now I'm sitting in a James Bond boardroom.
Well, both of you guys were out of town for the week of Thanksgiving, basically. Dane, you were in Nashville.
Right, right.
Enjoying that wonderful, warmer temperatures. And
it's beautiful, man. It was like 60.
I hate you.
I was worried about my flight getting delayed because a huge snowstorm hit Cleveland last night.
Really?
Cleveland got like 5 inches of snow from the time the game started until probably like 4 a.m. Wow. So I was worried about my travel logistics this morning. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm going to be stuck in the airport for God knows how long. And I was talking about it with Chris Hines, who also covers the Wolves. And I was just like, I'm going to be stuck here. I just know I am. And he wasn't on the flight until I think his flight was at like 9 this morning. So he wasn't quite as worried. But I'm like, I'm going to wake up at 4. I'm going to get to the airport an hour early. And I'm just going to sit there. And I was so discouraged about it. But I got out on time and it all went smoothly.
Well, awesome. Welcome back. Welcome home.
I appreciate it.
Glad you made it back in one piece. Lots to get into with this team right now. And 6-2 since the Jimmy Butler trade after the win in Cleveland last night. And, I mean, we're seeing it's amazing how you can make a trade to get two new players in who neither of whom are as good as the guy you're trading away. And it can just make a drastic difference in how the team is playing, the attitude. The defense has improved drastically. I'm impressed. I'm really excited to see this group. I was before Covington and Šarić got here after the trade was made, but before they played, I was thinking I'm really curious to see how this works. And now that we've gotten a pretty good sample size of it, it's been Dane, it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, that's the story, right? It's a completely different culture and happening immediately. I think that's the biggest surprise that I've seen. And Danny, I know you're there in the locker room too. It's night and day right away. And I don't think that's hyperbole. Like these guys are friends, and it's showing up on the floor. And after the last home game that I was at, I wasn't in Cleveland, but Kat was just talking about the importance of that continuity. And a lot of times with Kat, you kind of have to like parse through his words a little bit, but it was just, he seems really genuinely relaxed in just having a comfort of being able to just do the basketball things. And I wrote an article the other day and just kind of the expectations that come with being a max contract player. And there's a lot. I'm sure we'll get into some of this with Andrew Wiggins. But, you know, for Towns, it's you sign a $190 million contract and you're expected to put up with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
You become the face of the franchise.
Yeah.
You are the franchise is 100% tying its success to you.
Mm-hmm. And then so like dealing with the Butler stuff comes with that. Like he didn't sign up for it, or he didn't make that happen, but you kind of signed up for it because you said, this is my team. I'm part of this team. And we know that part of Butler's motivation for the frustration was that he wasn't getting paid as much as Towns and Wiggins. And, you know, Kat's persevered through that, and I wouldn't say he's played perfectly through these 8 games, but really he's come back to being that most dominant post offensive player, and that's super enticing. And I think we've now seen the defense and can be excited that that's going to come around a little bit too. And we knew that Cat was a stud offensive player. We know he has that. What we don't know is, can he be an average defender? And in this small sample size, we've seen him, you know, help this defense be, what were you saying, Danny? Second or third best defensive rating in the league?
They've got the third best defensive rating in the league since Cove and Sharch made their debuts in that Wednesday night game. I believe it was against the Pelicans at Target Center a couple weeks back now. So they've been good defensively. They're rating, they're one of three teams to keep that defensive rating below 100. And it's today's NBA, that's remarkable, really. No one does it. And I know it's only 2 weeks, and I'm not sure it's a short sample size because it's been seven games, but it's still really impressive to do.
Well, when we can see the play on the floor too, because it is funny with the sample size and you know, talking about that, and I hate to be the small sample size guy.
Yeah.
But you know, it is a small sample size. We can't say, hey, Robert Covington, look at his defensive rating, but don't look at his shooting percentage because he had one for 18 game. You know, it's like we need to kind of set the stats to the side. It's nice to see that third defensive rating. But what I know we can see, and I'm sure people listening to this podcast, you're smart. You're watching the Wolves games. You're seeing a different type of defense being played. And there is a fluidity, an allowed fluidity by Thibodeau for these guys to be seeing the floor more and more. They're seeing the floor more because they're allowed to switch more off the ball. And that's something we know has not been happening in the first couple of years. That's what Covington brings to this, is the option to be able to do that. And Sarge is up there too. For a big guy, he can tag in on the other big, and he can switch to some degree also. And that is why this defense is doing well. And that's why it doesn't surprise me to see that in the small sample, they've been as good as they have been.
For Covington specifically, has it helped that he has sort of taken over Jimmy's role in terms of like his role on the defensive side of the ball, but the fact that he's not being relied on to do so much offensively, to just basically be a spot-up shooter, that's really helped too, because there's not as much pressure on him on the offensive end to contribute so much that it's really helped him be a more effective defensive player.
I think that's the reason why Derrick Rose and Karl Towns haven't been great defensive players in their time here, is that so much of the impetus for them is on the offensive end, and you only have so much energy bandwidth that being able to focus that more so on one side of the floor, that helps. And it's not like Covington is a complete zero on off. I mean, that's not what you're saying, Manny. But to have more a limited like array of things you're asked to do on offense, so as to be able to do everything on defense, that makes a huge difference.
But also, if the Wolves are asking him to do everything on offense, things probably aren't going too well.
No,
let's just face it. That's not the type of player he is. He's not a guy that's going to be able to. I know he had 24 points against the Cavs on 8 of 12 shooting, but he's not the guy that's going to create for himself ever.
He's a poor dribbler.
Yes.
He's not going to take guys off the, you know, off the bounce.
He is a spot-up shooter. Over 50% of his shots come from behind the three-point line, and I was joking yesterday at the game, like, how many two-pointers has Covington made since he's been traded? He's now made 11 two-pointers.
More than Wiggins, though. No, you know,
Wiggins has not been good. Wiggins, he's been so bad. And I didn't get to watch all of Saturday's game.
I watched a little bit of it.
But
Chicago one?
Yeah, he's just not been good.
Well, there was, so at halftime of the Cleveland game, I went through and like looked up his previous shots, and he had made one of his previous 26 field goal attempts. Obviously, he was 0-for-12 in that. 2-for-26. He was 0-for-12 in that Bulls game, and then like stemming back all the way into the Nets game, he'd been missing shots. Also, he missed 16 straight mid-range jump shots,
you shouldn't shoot that many mid-range jump shots in a week.
So, okay, this is my question for you, Danny, as somebody who has now parachuted and put yourself like deeply into this team. What was your perspective of Andrew Wiggins, you know, kind of coming in here?
A guy that took a lot of really bad shots and was a minus defender, when he's a guy that should be the exact opposite of what he is. And he's got a ton of room to improve, and we've talked about it before. I'd love to see him be able to cut off the ball better. Now, he has I know the last three games he's not shot the ball well, period. But he shot the ball better from behind the arc than I expected him to. And he has been doing that better than at any point in his career. So I don't think I was far off base in expecting him to not be good shooting threes, because historically he hasn't been. So that's what my expectations were for him. And he's been, I feel like he's been super up and down this year. After immediately after the Butler trade, he played well until this most recent stretch in which he's just been unplayable, which we saw last night in the fourth quarter where he took a DNP.
That's true. I get the reason I kind of asked that is because, so I wasn't covering the team in any capacity his rookie season, but I was somebody who, you know, watched a bunch of Timberwolves games, mm-hmm. and was a fan, I guess you could say. And, you know, a lot of frustration with the style of Andrew Wiggins' play. And I guess just for me personally, in like being around him more on a consistent basis, and if it's his like personality, he makes a little bit more sense to me now. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I'm not saying he's like become a great player in my eyes or like,
no, because he hasn't.
He hasn't.
And you'd be wrong if you were saying that.
But it's like I can see that this is just his personality, that it's not like he was just some dude, because I thought initially he just didn't care at mm-hmm. all. And I get frustrated when people say he just doesn't care, because mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. Yes.
He's just very chill.
He's like so chill.
Yeah.
And that might be a bad thing, but it's not like, I don't know. I thought he was like thick skulled before I was around him, in that he just like wasn't, he was just kind of there, you know, and
kind of oblivious to
And now, like, I think he's,
if you're
he's
good.
Lost.
Be as chill as you want.
Like, but he's not. I know.
Just be good. Like, right. Who cares if you're chill or whatever? You can have whatever type of demeanor or attitude or anything. If you're good, you're good.
Right. I know. I know. I guess I'm just. I just say that because I think maybe we have a little bit of unique perspective to being around him, and he makes a little bit more sense to me now. And that, I don't know, like, we can be frustrated with those numbers. Those numbers are bad, and we should be frustrated mm-hmm. the shots that he's choosing. But it's also, I think, about finding ways to take that personality, not just the player, that personality, and get the most out of it. I think a good example is with Carl, is you weren't getting the most out of his personality with Jimmy because of the style of person that Jimmy was.
Yeah.
And now Covington kind of does seem to mesh a little bit better. So,
well, it seems like those two are getting along really well in the locker room. Like, they're always two of the last ones to get mm-hmm. ready after games, and they're always talking to each other. Like, last night in Cleveland, they were the last two in the locker room.
Same with Saturday.
They're
Cat and Cove.
Yes, it okay. seems like they're becoming really close friends really quickly.
That's awesome.
Like, there seems like a genuine like for each other.
Something I've thought about a lot for both Cat and Wiggins is I compare it to DeMar DeRozan in Toronto, the beginning of his career, and really inefficient numbers, but definitely a talent. You could see that.
He was a Costco version of Kobe Bryant.
Sure. And what then happened is Kyle Lowry came there, and they became best friends,
mm-hmm.
like actually best real life friends. And it turned a key in DeMar DeRozan that kind of changed who he was as a person. And we know what kind of proceeded after that with Toronto. I mean, yeah, they didn't go win any championships or anything, but they were the best team in the East last year, regular season-wise, and
they're
got
team,
so much more out of them. There's just a personality aspect to
yeah.
players and who aren't meeting expectations.
They're a team that goes to the finals at least once, if not twice, if not for LeBron being in Cleveland.
And they don't.
That's what it is.
And they don't if Kyle Lowry doesn't turn that key.
Correct. 100%.
And I guess so. My kind of perspective right after the trade went down was, you know, I was kind of skeptical. I'm like, all right, Covington and Saric, like, they're cool, but they're just all right players, you know, mm-hmm. like, and this is going to be the group going forward. So I'm like, did they just kind of cap themselves out here? And what I think I might underestimated is the value of that connection of personality, at least with Cat and Covington, that they can turn that proverbial key in Cat to become something that more resembles Anthony Davis rather than a center who's a you know, a tier below that.
So you're saying, like, is now the next thing sort of finding someone that can be that way for Wiggins now going forward?
You know, I would hope so. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. I don't know who could unlock that for Andrew. And
yeah.
But at the same time, no one would have guessed back in the day that Kyle Lowry would be the one to unlock it for DeMar DeRozan, too.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm enticed that there's something there for with Cat, with Covington. And then with Wiggins, we've known that he isn't the player that's quote unquote worth the $150 million contract we've had. But, you know, the goal all along has been, how do we get as much? Can we get that up to him being worth 70% of that, 80% of that? Because we know how important.
Can you turn him into a positive player now?
Yes. And
yeah.
Because if not, if Andrew Wiggins is somebody who's quote unquote worth $10 million a year, you're putting a weight on your team, but you're playing with the competitive disadvantage of not being able to use 15% of the salary cap. And that's a big deal in one season. It's a really big deal for five straight seasons because mm-hmm. he's here, you know, going forward. So you love to see what we're seeing with Cat. You love to see what we're seeing with Covington. But the next step is, how do we make it so Andrew Wiggins isn't a competitive disadvantage for this team?
And how discouraging was him being on the bench the entire fourth quarter against the Cavs in a game that it was a 4-point game?
It was
the right decision, and I think Tibbs deserves credit for making it, because we haven't seen Tibbs make in-game adjustments like that in I don't know how long, and that was the right one.
I think it happened 3 times last year with Jamal Crawford. Not that that's a lot, but it was very, very rare. And Tibbs said after the game, right? I mean, you were there, Danny. Mm-hmm. He said that it's going to be Wiggs most of the time. He thought about bringing him back in.
He brought up Cleveland playing a little bit of a zone defense, which they did. But I don't care what defense they're playing. If Andrew Wiggins is playing well, he's in the game.
Right.
That's a way of getting around it. And I do... Some part of me appreciates Tibbs protecting his guy a little bit, because that's what it was. But if Wiggins has, you know, 20 points and they're playing a zone, it doesn't matter. He's in the game. Yep. It's because he's missed X amount of his last shots. That's why he's not in the game. It's not because they're playing a zone.
And also because Derrick Rose has been very good.
Derrick Rose is good again, guys.
That's unbelievable.
I can say it now. Like, Derrick Rose is good again. And I think the one thing that really has impressed me is that he's kind of... There are times where he's still a volume shooter, but I think he knows so much better now how to pick his spots. Like, last night, he didn't need to take a ton of shots. I think he took 13 shots.
It was really quiet in the first half.
Only had 2 points until the fourth quarter. He scored 10 of his 12 in the fourth quarter, but he's the reason that that game went from a 4-point lead, and they opened up, I believe, on an 11-3 run to start the fourth quarter and created some separation. It was because of Derrick Rose.
And what a weapon that is to be able to say, all right, our guy's not doing it. Wiggins, our starting shooting guard, isn't doing it.
The guy on the veteran minimum contract has been better than the guy on the maximum contract.
And you compare that to the player who was in that role last year, Jamal Crawford. And, I mean, that's an even bigger disparity, the difference between Rose versus Crawford. I mean, he's been an absolute, you know, boon for this team. And he's a guy. I think he's a guy that the players in the locker room are connecting to. I don't know if it's the turn the key thing or whatever, but, like, they like him too.
It does seem like they like him. And he's a dude that I don't know. I wasn't around him earlier in his career, and I've heard that he maybe had some growing up to do when he was in Chicago, but he just gets it now. And I had not been around him prior to this season, so I can't speak on that. It's just things I've heard from people around the league. But he gets it now, and I could absolutely see how he's a leader in that locker room and how he is really well-liked there, because he's a dude that he knows what he's getting into, and he's been around. I mean, it's not like he's a rookie. He's a veteran. He is a leader in that locker room, and he's probably been their second-best player. On some nights, he's been their best player, and that's remarkable to say about Derrick Rose in 2018.
It just feels like he knows who he is as a player now, being in the league for this is – I guess technically his 10th year in the league. He had the 1 year that he sat out after the injury. It just feels like he just knows exactly who he is now at 30 years old and a veteran player. He knows what he can do on the floor. He's not trying to do too much. He knows exactly what his abilities are. And I guess my only question is, we're seeing a lot of people suggest, well, should he start now? Because he's, for the most part, he's played better than Jeff Teague over the last couple of weeks.
I would wholeheartedly agree that he's been better than Jeff Teague this year.
But the question is, should he start? Because people are suggesting that. And I'm not sure. I kind of like him in the role that he is.
Well, that bench unit that's got him, Tyus, Gorgie, Sharich, and then Covington's a lone starter that
comes
plays
back,
with it.
Yeah.
they open up the second and fourth quarter, that unit's the reason they won the game last night against the Cavs, because the starters didn't play all that well.
Right.
But that bench unit destroyed Cleveland's bench. That's why they built a lead in the second quarter. That's why they stretched the lead back out in the fourth quarter. Because once Cat and Teague came back in, Cleveland closed the gap down a little bit towards the end of that game.
But that would be my question to anyone who is saying Derrick Rose should start is, is it because you want him to play more minutes? Because he's getting the minutes of a starter.
He's getting starters' minutes, yeah.
So that it's kind of semantics at some point, particularly to Danny's point, if the rotation is working where mm-hmm. he fits in better or fits in well with the bench.
Why and change then, it?
Yeah, I'm not really into change it. I saw Britt Robson of The Athletic kind of pose the idea of bringing Andrew off the bench mm-hmm. as a sixth man, maybe like – that's something there, but in doing that, well, I don't totally disagree with that. You risk a little alienation of Wiggins, I think, with Teague, if you were to just say, hey, Derek's a starting point. I mean, there again, there's personalities involved mm-hmm. in this. Things are kind of working right now. I don't see anything screaming, even though Wiggins has played as poorly as he has, that says you need to have Derrick Rose be with these starters because it just wouldn't be that many more minutes.
What a lot of people don't always realize is it's not as easy as just plugging in a guy in NBA 2K and playing.
Right.
It's not that easy because these are real humans with real emotions and real feelings, and things affect them positively or negatively depending on how they're treated as people. And that doesn't happen in video games. It doesn't happen in fantasy basketball. It doesn't happen in anything that any of us can do. But it happens in real life on the actual hardwood at Target Center, and that's where it matters.
And to that point, that's the same thing with the Josh Okogie and the yes. Anthony Tolliver thing, is you have a rotation in place, and it's not just so easy as saying, hey, let's give Josh Okogie 8 of Tyus Jones' minutes. Or I'm not saying Okogie shouldn't be playing, but it's not, you don't just get 48 minutes at every position and you just get to decide, okay, we want to do X amount here, X amount there. There is a flow to it. And to Thibodeau's discredit, I guess, would be that he prefers very long stretches of time for his players to play on the floor at a time. And that makes it harder to kind of like scramble in an extra player for smaller stints. We've talked about this before. What I'm disappointed in is not finding little situational spots for Okogie or Tolliver to be, plugged in where it would seem to make sense. I get them generally being out of the rotation, but it's why they're not, and why we're not going to see, why I don't expect we'll see any major rotational shifts, whether it's Rose starting or whatever, is because Tibbs wants his guys to be playing 8 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And like Philly is actually a really good example of the counter to that. You'll see what they do is Joel and Bede will start the game, come out of the game, come back into the game, and be back out even before the first quarter is over. It's just this stirring of the pot that they're always doing. And when you have that scramble, it's easier to just kind of throw things in here and there. But if it's your coaching style not to do that, it makes it harder to switch up the rotation, I guess.
Yeah, and getting back to the Derrick Rose point real quick, I understand why people want them to start because Jeff Teague has been incredibly frustrating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And last night in the first quarter, he had a matchup with Colin Sexton, and it went really well. He had 10 of his 13 points in the first quarter, and then he was not heard from again. He made no more shots from the floor. He was just not good the rest of the way. And there was another example where he was a little too slow in making a decision, and it cost the Wolves 3 points because
shot clock violation.
There was a shot clock violation. I believe Covington hit the shot. It clearly left his hand after the buzzer. I mean, it was the correct call. But the reason Covington didn't get the shot off in time was because the ball stuck in Teague's hand.
Yeah, and but that's the thing with Teague is like you don't have a he's not a superstar point guard. He's never been consistent.
And I'm not asking him to be a superstar point guard. I'm asking him to make quicker decisions.
I don't think Teague is going to be a guy who you see big changes from. Like he just kind of is who he is, and
he's been in the league long enough now.
He turns it up when he gets poked. By like if something ticks him off a little bit, mm-hmm. like that's when he gets going. And Sexton did that in the first quarter. What you were just talking about, Danny, is that'll get him going. And we saw that in the playoffs. He played poked the whole time, But it's
game three against the Rockets.
Yeah, right. It's it's just not like a mainstay of his diet to really be engaged for all of his minutes. And that's a bummer.
Yeah.
I don't know why exactly that is, but we have the sample size that says this is kind of who Jeff Teague is and how he plays.
Mm-hmm.
So where, off of that point now, then where do we go from here? Because the team is overall playing very well and they're winning games. They're 6-2 since the trade.
We're poking at the bad things, but it's been really good.
Right. So I mean,
things are always easier to talk about. Too.
Right.
That's true.
Let's be honest here.
Yeah. But I guess in terms of, because right now you look at this roster top to bottom, you've got guys that are, like, think about the last two guys, or the last three guys we've talked about, Teague, Rose, and Wiggins. Rose is playing really well, and he's on a veteran minimum contract. Wiggins is not playing well, and he's on a max contract. Teague, we just got through talking about Teague. Teague's making $19 million a year,
yep.
And he's got a player option for next year. So now it's kind of like, okay, we got to find a way to sort of proportion this correctly. Like, how
it's going
to
take time, man.
Yeah, I mean that's the tough thing, is like, where are we thinking trades? Are we thinking, you know, is everything going to happen in the off season? Like, because that's going to be there's going to be a lot of questions that need to be answered, I think, over these next few months as we get closer to the trade deadline. Do moves need to be made to sort of get this exactly the way it should be? I don't know. What do you guys
think? Zoom further out than that. The year I always, I don't know, just kind of picked it, is like 2021. You got Kat, yeah, who's 25 years old then, and the 2020-21 year, and more so in his prime. Theoretically, he will be at that point the player we expect him to be kind of going forward. And so this is, while this is kind of fun along the way and they're looking good, like
half game out of the playoffs.
Yeah, right. But it's all a bridge. If your goal is a championship, a real contention, it's all a bridge to years down the road,
yeah,
in finding a way to insulate Karl Anthony Towns with as many Robert Covington type players as you possibly can. And to your point, Manny, there are a lot of salary cap obstacles in the way of that in the immediate, and then with Wiggins in kind of the
forever
extension. I mean,
until the end of time.
But it's there. The Wiggins contract is there, and if we assume that isn't going to be moved, then it becomes even more critical to nail every single other move along the way. Because, like, yeah, I said, that 15% competitive disadvantage, whatever you want to call it, you're already up against it. You're pushing uphill. So you've got to make the replacement for Jeff Teague a year or two from now. You got to nail that. You got to nail every first round pick. You've got to get Saric at a price that you feel comfortable with once his deal expires after next season. You have to nail all of this and find ways in which to bring in more and more pieces that make Karl Anthony Towns better and better. That is the path to contention. And it's realistically years down the road.
I'm just curious who the replacement for Jeff Teague is.
Yeah.
Yes, so probably not Tyus Jones, right?
I don't see it, yeah, being I mean, he played well last night, but he has not played well in large part this year, I don't think.
I think I've always felt, even when Tyus was a rookie, I always felt that his ceiling as a player was going to be a backup
which
point
is
guard,
fine.
Which
I mean, is fine.
Exceeds the expectations of where he was drafted.
You right. need backup point guards. Like, you need them, yeah, but I don't think he's a viable replacement for Jeff Teague.
No, I probably don't either, but to the salary point, it's kind of, I think about Darren Collison in Indiana, where mm-hmm. it's like, that's their fifth starter, and he's making like $10 million a year, and he's solid. He's like really solid. So that would be the like path for Jones, is to be the fifth starter who's at a bargain-type deal. Then you can kind of use that other money to make up for Wiggins, to whatever, to pay Saric, those sort of things. But if you don't want to do that, if you find the point guard position to be really critical to, you know, to being a contender, because a lot of people would argue that you need to have a stud lead ball handler to make it, then yeah, you got to explore some other things, but that gets more complicated. Tyus is the path of least resistance to,
yeah,
a replacement for Teague.
Yeah.
The other question too is, we've been talking about how well Derrick Rose is playing. What happens with him? Does he just, if they move on from Tibbs, Do they move on from Derrick Rose as well, even if he continues to play as well as he's
been playing?
I think
if they move on from Tibbs, Derrick Rose probably moves on from the Wolves, more so than the Wolves moving on from him. And I do think his next contract is going to be more than just the veteran's minimum that it is.
So that was interesting. Is I when I was flying back from Thanksgiving, I landed on the plane and like went on Twitter or whatever, and somebody I tweeted something about Derrick Rose, and there was like a little conversation going on about what his next deal was going to be, and someone said like 4 years, $60 million. I was like, okay, whoa. No, I know. I'm not. And so I was like, I don't agree with that. But it was really the first time I'd ever kind of started thinking about, you know, what will, you know, that number look like. And so I texted a friend in the league and was just like, I really don't know what do you see his market value being? And the number he gave me was, if it's not with the Wolves, like $5 million, maybe up to the mid-level exception, which is within the Wolves' realm of spending power, that they could decide, if that is his market value, you know, to keep him. They will have their mid-level exception next year, and they could give that to Rose. The question, like you said, Manny, though, is what is Derrick Rose without Tom Thibodeau? Because you think about this type of Derrick Rose, even though it's been great, a lot of other coaches would pull the reins back a little bit and say, all right, man, this is a lot of you. Can we make you more efficient in, you know, in certain ways? Just because there is a ball dominance to him that's working. And so I don't know. Thibodeau is the perfect coach for him in just saying, go do you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what other teams around the league would be, how willing they would be able to say, yeah, let's sign up Derrick Rose for a 3-year, $30 million contract. Like, are there teams that are going to do that? Because he's going to be 31, 32, 33, obviously with the injury history. Like, he looks good now, but age is undefeated, you know?
That just sounds like a Sacramento Kings deal. That sounds so much like a Sacramento Kings contract.
Which exists, though. Like, those things can happen. There's dudes, I mean, there's going to be more money available in this offseason, and, you know, going forward. Like,
it's a good summer to be a free agent.
Yes, whereas last season was a terrible one.
Yeah.
Rose, even with, like, the merits he had entering this summer, which are a lot lower than they are now, he still would have probably got paid more than the veterans minimum had it been in this coming. I mean, it's the economy of it all, you know? So, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. Fortunately, we have 61 more games to kind of figure this out more. Thibodeau and the Wolves front office and all that does as well. But
it is remarkable there's that much left in the season, because it feels like we've been through three quarters of a season at the very least already.
Just with all the drama.
Doesn't it?
And
it does not feel like that this Wolves team has only played, 21 games?
But it's fun, man. I mean, it's like, it's cool that it matters, that it seems like there's a news cycle and there's like a value in looking at every one of these games. I mean, the Jimmy stuff was frustrating, but it was like real and it was important. Yeah. It was critical to what the future of this team was going to be, not only from the trade, but how he was affecting Wiggins and Towns. And now we're learning so much about Covington every game. I mean, I feel like every Covington game, I get to a better idea of, you know, who he is. We're slowly getting to know Saric. Like, I'm thankful we have 61 more games, because there's so much more that we're going to be able to learn and have. Coming from a franchise that historically makes games pretty irrelevant after the first couple months of the season, like, it's a great time to be a Timberwolves fan, I think.
Sure, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, at least they're exciting, if nothing else.
Yeah, they're a lot more. They've been a lot more fun to watch the last couple of weeks since the trade. So I'm looking at the standings right now, and Danny, you mentioned this earlier. They're a half game out of the playoff spot, right? Spot right now. Like,
now, granted, there are three teams tied for eighth, and another one with the same record as them.
They got a better record than the Jazz now, right?
They do. The Jazz are in 14th at 9-12. Better record than the Houston Rockets.
The Jazz are only 5.5 games behind the top-seeded L.A. Clippers right now.
Which we all had in September when training camp started. Everyone said that towards the end of November, if the Clippers aren't running the West, something's wrong, right?
But I guess that leads to my question, though, of, one, can this team make the playoffs? And two, should they make the playoffs, considering where they're at right now and what missing the playoffs and getting another lottery pick could potentially mean for the franchise going forward?
Well, it's an opportunity cost question, right? Like, yeah. they're not going to tank. Like,
and they shouldn't.
Yeah. So you're asking yourself, all right, is it, how valuable is it to be the, like, 12th best team in the league, which gives you a 2-3% chance, whatever, of jumping up into the top three? Or do you say we're cool with moving down 6-7 picks into being a playoff team and getting more value for Towns and Wiggins, that experience of another playoff series? Because that is important. I pushed pretty hard against the idea of making the playoffs last year, or just at least pointing out that there was advantages to not doing it, because they would have got 2 first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have had to give up that Adrian Payne pick yet. So that it made a lot more sense last year, I think, to say, hey, let's take a big step forward, you know, be a winning team, but, you know, not make the playoffs. There's the opportunity cost was kind of there because you have 2 Josh Okogies.
Mm-hmm.
Then at that point, which, again, what we're saying, that's what this team needs. But now, man, I'm with Tibbs. Like, let's put the pedal to the metal and see how much, you know, this team can get, because we've been saying it's so important to learn what this group, you know, exactly is. So I'm all for it. I think it's a fair question.
I mean, as of right now, the Wolves have a 1.7% chance of landing the number one overall pick, according to tankathon.com, which is one of my favorite websites in the NBA.
Great.
It's
yeah.
Awesome. So, like,
what are the odds they make the playoffs in your head? Because we can't look at that Carmelo 5-3. We can't look at any stats, really. No. Like, I'm pushing back on all stats I see everybody throwing up, because this team doesn't make sense yet.
I give them a 35% chance of making the playoffs. I think that the West is going to settle down a little bit, and there are, I mean, the Rockets are right behind the Wolves at 9-10, and they're in 13th. Like, they're a game below 500, and they're in 13th. So it's going to shake out a little bit, and I think the talent always rises. Like, I don't expect Utah to finish in 14th place.
Right.
I don't know how much of a believer I am in the 10-10 Sacramento Kings either.
Right.
So I'm not sure that they're one of the 8 best teams in the Western Conference.
Is it fair to say that they are one of the least likely teams to face an injury, given the youth of the group? Just because of Rose?
No, because look how many times that a Tom Thibodeau-directed player has gone down with a non-contact knee injury that could directly be traced to how many minutes they play. I mean, it happened to Jimmy Butler last year.
I would,
in the fourth quarter when they're up by 20. There wasn't a case with Jimmy Butler, but in the fourth quarter, they're up by 20 with 2 minutes left.
Like these things, like, Derrick Rose has been through a lot. Knee injury wise, some of that is fluke stuff, but some of that is the dude's averaged 40 minutes a game, and your body can't hold up for 82 games doing that. It's just, unless you are an absolute freak of a person, which at this point, no one really is an incredible athlete on that team. Like, no one's like, oh my God, this guy is no doubt one of the 10 best athletes in the world.
What about Wiggins? Team.
No, he's not.
Athlete?
He's not, athletically. I don't think he's one of the 10 most athletic guys in the league.
Well, he has very, well, I'll say for Wiggins, to his credit, he's only missed one game in his career, the first 4 years of his career, and then he missed a couple at the beginning of the year with a kind of somewhat random, like, really bad Charlie horse.
Yeah.
Like that.
It happens.
It happens, and it can happen to everyone. And I guess my point in posing this question is, I'll hear it on the Derrick Rose stuff, like, of course, there's an injury risk there. And you're right with the Thibodeau minutes. That also ups the odds. But I think when you look at the rosters, and particularly the ages of the players who are getting minutes on the Timberwolves compared to the teams above them, I think this group is less likely to get hurt than, you know, even a team like the Warriors or, you know, Portland, who's a little bit older. A lot of those teams that are ahead of them, Utah's not exactly, you know, young either. I think a path to them to making the playoffs is an injury to a key piece on a team above them. I'm with you. It's under 50% that they make it.
What's your percentage chance at?
I said after the trade 30. And now I...
Was that after the trade prior to them playing together?
Well, it was just right away after the trade.
Okay.
Like, just on a... Just because then
just
the West
throwing a number out there for Twitter.
Well, it was, I think it was on my podcast, but it was the West was also kind of murky like this too, and
it's been murky all year.
Right. I mean,
there's no other way to say it.
And maybe
it has been, I mean, other than the Wolves starting out 4-9, it's been murky all year.
Yeah, and so I think it would be hard for me to not be more optimistic now, 8 games later, than I was then. So I would take over the 35 that you said. Let's get 40, 45. I mean, I think it's a reasonable proposition for this team to compete for the playoffs. I do think that some of those teams that you listed below them are likely to rebound at a rate that's better than this group. It's hard to come back from those 9 losses they racked up with Butler. Going forward, I'll say this. Going forward in the next 61 games of the season, I think they have a record of one of the eight best records in the West for those 61 games. I would bet that.
Well, I mean, if they have that, they're probably a playoff team because they're only a half game out of a playoff spot right now.
45%. That's what I'll say. Maybe that's what all that math meshed together means.
Well, in theory, I mean, you look at where they're at right now. They're sitting at technically 11th in the West right now at 10-11. So you look at, let's say, Dallas, San Antonio are ahead of them. You got to figure San Antonio is going to end up being better than 10-10. And probably a playoff team, I would assume, right?
They're super old.
Yeah.
Super old.
Yeah, they are old, and their depth at point guard with Murray going down.
Killed him. That hurt him, yeah.
Because I think if he were healthy and playing, they're no doubt a playoff team because they were a playoff team last year without Kawhi Leonard. And sure, DeMar DeRozan is not Kawhi Leonard, but he's better than no Kawhi Leonard. So that was an upgrade just because Kawhi didn't play. So that upgraded their roster just because he's an able body that's willing to be on the court for you. So that's how they got better there. But I could see it being very hard to keep their playoff streak alive this year.
And maybe another question is how aggressive any of these teams in the West are about pursuing a trade at the deadline to boost them up for the Wolves or any of the other teams.
Here's the other issue. There might be a lack of sellers because it's so murky. There are going to be more teams this year that feel as if they have a chance to make the playoffs. And who knows how many of them want to chase it. But why would they trade away their players? Why would they try and sell? If they've got an outside chance at making the playoffs, why would they sell?
I'm just looking at the standings. I agree with you. There's a lot of teams there. But I think the really bad teams have a lot of players that they want to get off of. And you just brought up the Spurs and point guard. It's like the Atlanta Hawks are going to move Jeremy Lin. Like, you know, something like that makes sense. The Cavs are awful.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of, you know, vets from...
They're going to trade... Kyle Korver is going to make a contender very happy.
And, you know, I was even thinking last night, like, Tristan Thompson's deal isn't good, but, like, that guy could help. Like, if you could get off a worst contract, like the Wolves, for example, like, a Gorgui Dieng's deal is worse than Tristan Thompson's deal. Like, something like that where
you
bring
Tristan
in a vet.
Thompson's a better player than Gorgui.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying is, and so you attach something onto that. I don't think the Wolves are going to do it, but there's a lot of those like Bismack Biyombo deals that are out there. And I
could not believe Bismack Biyombo. That is outside of Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng getting what they got from the Lakers. I think the Bismack Biyombo deal, well, and Matthew Dellavedova from the Bucks too. Those were like the four deals and Tyler Johnson with the Heat. So we'll go five.
I got Yamahimi. Yeah, Yamahimi. You got Joakim Noah, like 2016.
Yeah, oh my God.
You knew Bismack would
like,
get paid, though.
Bismack,
just because of that,
at least he was a kid. At least he was a kid. Joakim was like 30.
Bismack got that deal based off games 3 and 4 of the conference finals in Toronto against the Cavs. That was it.
Yep.
I'm just saying there are a couple of those guys that are vets on bad teams. And this happens every year that, you know, do get moved, you know, and some team's going to fall back a little bit. Like Orlando's been a nice story. Maybe Charlotte, you know, kind of falls off a little bit and they eventually do sell. Like Kemba, you move Kemba onto like any team. Like that's a huge game changer there.
I love Kemba, man.
He's killing
so
it.
Good.
He's so good. And he's, I think it's super cool and kind of super sad at the same time that he's like so good and that team has not been good, but he's also just like, I want to stay here. I want to be here with this team long term. Like it's
only
it's
12
sad,
million,
but
too.
It's also awesome at the same time.
He's on that Steph Curry contract, basically.
Exactly. And he's gonna get paid. Yeah.
Is there a better player in a worse situation in the NBA than Kemba Walker right now?
Oh,
How about anyone on the Bradley Beal? I mean, I don't know if he's better than Kemba.
That situation is not because of lack of talent. It's because they all hate each other. Kemba just doesn't have talent.
Sounds like a bad situation. I don't know. I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago, you would have said Karl Anthony Towns.
Potentially. But again, not because of lack of talent. Like,
oh, on the team. Okay, on
like
the team.
That was because they hated each other. Not because there's no talent.
Right. I mean, Anthony Davis is always a front runner for that award, too.
But they've got Jrue Holiday.
Okay, but Charlotte
and Nikola Mirotic. Charlotte's got Kemba.
Yeah, and they also have a better record than New Orleans.
Yeah, but...
And Anthony Davis is better than...
Oh, there's no question about that, Kemba. Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating trade deadline. It'll be fascinating to see if the Wolves, to what degree they, you know, they get involved in.
Well, where else can they improve now? What kind of trade could you see them making?
It would probably need to, because we have 11 rotation players, it would probably need to be some sort of package combo, multiple sort of deal. So it would be tricky, which kind of makes me think Tibbs won't get like too far into the mix.
Well, I'm curious how much he's involved right now in that. I'm curious how much is on his plate versus how much is on Scott Layden's plate in terms of deciding that.
I know Glenn Taylor has said that Layden is going to
kind of handle that.
Be the guy, be sort of the talking guy, but like everything is still...
I don't know, man.
Layden and Tibbs are still...
That sounds like a lot of PR to me.
Yeah.
Tom Thibodeau took this job because it gave him full autonomy over the team. He hated that he didn't have that in Chicago, and that was... a huge reason in why he came here was to be, and it, to some degree, it doesn't even really matter because Scott Layden and him are in lockstep. Mm-hmm. So even if it's Layden making the decision, it's going to be a Thibodeau decision, you know, like
right.
The ethos of that. So
no deal gets done unless Tom Thibodeau says.
Right. I threw out a couple things. I mean, you have some pieces in Anthony Tolliver that might be appealing to, you know, to somebody else. And if you can find a way to kind of combo some of that together for a team who's ready to sell, you know, sell someone. I mean, the Wolves could trade their first round pick. I don't know if that's a great idea, a future one. It'll kind of depend, I think, on where they are come the beginning of February. But there's always options. I mean, there's going to be Wiggins talk about that. If a team, one of those really bad teams, does want to say, hey, you know, we'll take a shot on a 23-year-old.
Who would you guess that would be?
Phoenix? I mean, a team that you know has, we got Wiggins locked up for 5 years. We're cool if he's way below his mark, the value of that deal for the first two of them. But when DeAndre Ayton kind of comes up a little bit and when Booker kind of comes up even more, and theoretically in their minds, I mean, it's going to be a team that's, to all of our perceptions, is a little naive to what's happened here. But
and also a team that doesn't feel as if they've got a shot to land someone big in free agency, which rules out the Knicks, because I think we could all say that they're a little naive, but they feel as if they have a shot to land someone in free agency.
There's, like you said earlier, Danny, there's always the Sacramento Kings out there too. It's like, I don't know, some team, and I when I was in Las Vegas for Summer League, like that was the biggest question I was asking. You know, there's all the people around there who are a lot smarter than us, who kind of understand these values more, and they're like, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a great deal, but there are teams that are willing to take risks on big deals if they believe in the youth and the talent of a player. And Wiggins does have talent and he has youth. He's never put it together to any way that makes it a safe bet to make. But when you're a bad young team, you take risks like that. So at some point, whether it's this deadline or, like we said, before that 2021 time, the contention time, there's a chance that there's a team that's willing to, you know, to bite on that and say, we think we can get more out of Andrew Wiggins than Sam Mitchell, Flip Saunders, and Tom Thibodeau did. Because it is fair to say that those guys, those coaches have not done Wiggins any favors either.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. I would not disagree with that whatsoever.
You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes, podcast1.com, and 1500ESPN.com. This is probably our longest one.
It's been a long time
since we. Well, you know, we got I got Mackie and Judd to produce, and I'm a busy guy. guys. I'm a hard worker.
I'm not. The Wolves canceled practice today.
I'm pumped about that.
And they were tired last night. You could tell. And sure, on paper, this stretch of games where they played Brooklyn, Chicago, Cleveland doesn't look very daunting, and talent-wise, it's not. But when you fly from Minneapolis to Brooklyn, back to Minneapolis to Cleveland, in 4 days, that takes a toll on you. So
it was like, good that those were bad teams. It was good that those were bad teams.
Yes, had they played a 500-level team last night, they would have lost. It would have been a scheduled loss.
Yeah. Well, this was fun, guys. We'll do it again next week. Danny, you and I will do it again Thursday. And,
can't wait.
Can't wait. It's going to be fun. Until next time, enjoy your Wolves basketball. For Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.